On this Monday night, and as we said on Friday night when we said goodnight, Dr. Henry Nyman and I said there would be a lot going on. There is a lot going on since the CDC began to start testing again last Wednesday, Thursday. Gosh, the cases in the U.S. are now over 100 and growing rapidly. I would ask all of you just to go to Rents.com. And read the headlines. If you don't have time to click and read, that's fine. Just read the headlines. You'll see a lot of stories going right to Dr. Nyman's site, Recombinomics.com, obviously the foremost scientific platform in this war against coronavirus in the world. Some of the later stories we've just gotten from Henry in the last hour or so, the coronavirus is now confirmed in a 20-year-old female in Norfolk County, Massachusetts, from Italy. She came from Italy. Another case, community cluster, Placer County, California, involving healthcare workers. Another community transmitted disease in a 70-year-old female in King County, Washington. She is described to be in critical condition. Washington has really taken a lot of shots in the last 4 or 5 days. But the bigger story about Washington is that the people up there now are aware of the fact that the virus had been running loose in the state for weeks, maybe a month and a half. Who knows? It's not only been running loose in Washington, the virus, as you heard first here on this program many weeks ago, has been running all over the country. And it loves air travel. But it'll travel by car, by bus, by train. It doesn't really care. It loves to travel. So with that, let's welcome back Dr. Henry Nyman. Hello, Henry. Another week is here, and there's much to get caught up on. So go right ahead.
Hi, Jeff. Yeah, it's really going to happen. Just to clarify on that, Washington is not, might be 6 weeks. It's definitely 6 weeks. And the reason... it's clear that it's been running around there for 6 weeks is that's actually where the first case was that was identified in the United States.
This is critical, everyone. Listen, please, Henry, hold on. This is really important, and I want you to watch how Henry put this together, which locks in the six-week, month-and-a-half period that it was running loose there. This is brilliant. I never would have thought of it. Go ahead, Henry. Tell them how it works. This is fascinating.
Okay. Well, I've said it many times in the past, the stories in the sequence. And basically, the first case in the U.S. was in Snohomish, Washington, just Seattle area, a little bit north of Seattle. And this was a 35-year-old who had come from Wuhan and had... developed symptoms and then went to see the doctor and told him he was from Wuhan. And they called the health department and got a sample and confirmed that indeed he was positive. And then they sequenced the sample. And it was this ORF8 version lineage. I talked about that in the past. ORF8 was the gene that was mutated in SARS that led to the international outbreak. And the ORF8 was showing up in Guangdong province this time around. It was associated with a lot of clusters. And so that definitely caught my attention. And the problem was that he had arrived, but he may have actually been symptomatic on the flight. It was a little bit fuzzy as to whether he was symptomatic coming over or he got symptomatic shortly after he landed. But it was about, I think, 4 or 5 days before he saw the doctor. You know, it usually starts that way, that it kind of starts as a cold. And it's not that serious. And if you continue to get worse, then you end up going to the doctor. If it doesn't get much worse than a cold, you basically get over it, and nobody knows. I mean, you don't see a doctor, nobody tests, and you don't even know what you had. You just had something, but it's gone, and you're not worried about it. So anyway, he went to the doctor. He was positive. They sequenced it, and then because it was the first one in the United States, the CDC was interested probably to make a vaccine against it, and they ended up cloning it, and they put out the sequence of a couple of clones. Part of the reason you clone it is you can then grow it and get as much of it as you want, but it also kind of cleans it up. And when you sequence it directly from the clinical sample, there could be a mixture there. There can be some major components and minor components. And if you clone it, you end up picking out the version that's probably the major sequence in it, and it grows well. And as it turned out, when they grew it, both of they published the sequence of both of the clones, and there were only three changes in the. In the sequence from the consensus sequence, the original sequence that came from Wuhan. And it had the ORF8 mutation, and it had one other mutation, upstream. And those two kind of defined that lineage. So when I was talking about the ORF8 lineage, they all had these same two mutations. And then this one had a third one, and the third one was rare. It was one that, yeah, basically was in the two clones and was in the original samples, but it really wasn't in any of the other sequences. And then when this outbreak happened in Washington, there was one group that was from Fred Hutchinson Labs in Seattle, in association with the University of Washington, and they had started a flu study, and the flu study was to basically get samples from residents of Seattle. It was kind of a crowdsource type of a study where you could sign up online, and they would go ahead and you know, if you thought you had the flu, you could send in the sample by I think you can mail in the sample, and then they would basically tell you whether you had the flu or not. And then they expanded it to go ahead and look at SARS-CoV-2, where the virus is causing the COVID-19 outbreak. Mm-hmm. And that was just for experimental purposes, so you didn't really get to do that as a clinical diagnosis. They weren't accredited to do that, but they, you know, you kind of signed off that, you know, they would tell you whether you had the flu or not. If you didn't have the flu, they could still go ahead and further test your sample, try to figure out what was going on there.
I want to get to the point. Here's the point. Now, we've got a lot to cover here. Yeah, go ahead and give us the point, and then jump to the punchline. That's what we want to do.
Okay. Well, the point was that he was negative for the flu. He was a high school student, 17 years old, and he was one of these community cases. There, he had not traveled. He was, you know, he had been infected in the area. He was also in Snohomish mm-hmm. County, mm-hmm. and they got the sequence and they put the sequence up online, and it had those same three mutations that the original one had 6 weeks earlier. And because one of the three was that rare mutation and it matched, that it was virtually certain that that virus that was picked up a week ago is the same virus that was the first one in the United States. So that indicated that when the CDC did their tracing, they came up empty. They didn't come up with any contacts that were positive. But there were some contacts that were positive. They, you know, either weren't tested or the test really wasn't working that well, or they got to them too late, so they had already, you know, had already gone in their lower respiratory tract and they took a sample from the upper, or they had a mild case and they got over it, but that doesn't mean they didn't pass it on. But right. In any event, the match indicated that the virus had been there for the full time for 6 weeks
and running around loose for 6 weeks.
In that 6 weeks, right? It was running around loose and was spreading among the residents in the area. And you know, just because they identified one doesn't mean that others didn't bring the virus into the area. So you know, this one. You know, we'll find out as soon as they start releasing the other sequences. I was kind of looking for that. They're usually kind of quick on it. I'm a little surprised there aren't other ones because in Washington, there are a large number of cases. The number is up to 18 now.
18.
So there's 18 positive, including six deaths. Six have died now. That's where the first death in the U.S. was, and actually it's where the first six deaths in the U.S. There's only six deaths in the U.S., and they're all in the Seattle area. There's one in Snohomish County, and the other five are in King County. And usually with deaths, it's easy to get the virus because you can do an autopsy, and usually they're intubated before they die, and that makes it easy to get a fluid from the lungs, and that's generally loaded with virus. And so I was a little surprised the virus sequences haven't come out beyond these two from Snohomish County. But that'll pretty much determine whether this one introduction led to all of these cases, or if that one led to a subset, which included this high school student, and then there were others that either came in earlier or later, which accounted
The most important part here is that Henry can demonstrate viable proof that this virus, as he said long ago, right here, is running around all over the place. It can go anywhere it's being taken, right? It has no problem at all.
Yeah.
It's all over the country. It's
right.
We're going to end up with a lot of people sick and a lot of people, unfortunately, older people with underlying health conditions are not going to make it if all goes according to what we've seen.
It's not just going to be older, and it's not just going to be without underlying health conditions.
Well, look at the 23-year-old soccer player from Iran. Yes, 23-year-old
athlete. That's right. And the whistleblower in Wuhan, I mean, he was a physician. He was 40, you know, mid-40s, I think, when he died. And there was another healthcare worker who was in his 20s when he died. And these people didn't have underlying health conditions. And they weren't all older. And part of that is the story in the sequence also. There are some reports in the literature talking about neurological issues, and then this virus is a little bit unusual in that it can be picked up in fecal material. Usually the virus is in the upper respiratory tract or it goes to the lungs, but it doesn't, show up in
the digestive tract. And then that's right. And that means if you go into a public bathroom or around a bathroom that's been used by someone who's infected and it's in their digestive tract, it'll be in the air in aerosolized micro droplets, possibly. And you've got to keep that in mind.
Right.
It's all being transmitted.
And the reason is in all of these other tissues that flu virus usually isn't in, and the coronavirus usually isn't in, is also because of the sequence. And what this virus has that's somewhat unusual is it's got a polybasic cleavage site, so that when the virus goes to get into a cell, it not only has to have a receptor on the surface of that cell, but the cell has to have a protease that will cleave the S protein in this case. So this is the surface protein. It's called S, but it's the spike. The reason it's called a coronavirus is it looks like a crown under the microscope, and the little spikes that are sticking up from that crown are the spike is the same as the H in flu, the hemagglutinin gene, the envelope gene, and RNA tumor viruses. They all kind of use a protein on the surface, a glycoprotein, to get into the cells, and they all have the same requirement. They have to have a receptor, so the cell type has to have a receptor that is recognized by this S protein in this case. And it also has to have a protease. And that's why in chickens you have high path and low path. The high path influenza has a polybasic cleavage site. And so it has to cleave next to a basic amino acid. And when there's a series of basic amino acids, then several different enzymes can do that cleavage. And when you can do that cleavage with a bunch of different enzymes, you can get into a bunch of different cell types. And so this virus can get into multiple cell types, and it can go to a lot of different places in the body that it isn't supposed to be. Normally, the virus is just stays in your upper respiratory tract, and you get in your nose and throat, and it stays in your nose and throat. This one goes down into your lungs, and it can go into other tissues. And that's the reason why the virus is so concerning. And at the beginning, the quote of the day was, someone said, gee, I wonder if the cough going around in Seattle is actually the coronavirus.
Yeah, now let me repeat that for our listeners. Hold on. They're in Seattle, in the urban area of Seattle. Everyone's got a cough. Yeah, not everyone, but you know what I'm saying. Just a lot of people have a cough.
Something's going around.
Right. There you go. Go ahead.
And they put out a press release. And the press release acknowledged what we just went over as far as how long the virus has been there. And it cited this flu study, because a lot of people in Seattle have given samples to this flu study. It's all over the place. You know, you just send it in and find out whether you got the flu. And they said that because of the flu study, and because they found this match, and they know that the virus has been circulating for 6 weeks in the area, that it was certainly possible that people that had mild cases may very well have the coronavirus, because you know, some people are asymptomatic, some have mild cases, some end up getting into trouble, they get pneumonia, and they go in the hospital. If they're older and have underlying conditions, they don't do as well, but it's not limited to older with underlying conditions. And they put out on their press release yesterday that it's certainly possible. You know, they didn't say, you know, if you got a cough, you got the virus, but they said it's certainly possible that the virus is circulating in the community, and it may very well be. They said it was just like flu. You know, if you have a mild case, you may very well have the virus. Right. And they're closing schools there. There's been, you know, the one that matched was a high school student. They have other ones that are teachers. They have other ones where the kids of somebody is this positive. They're worried about what school that child goes to, and right. There have been several school closings.
I think 10 schools.
Ten
schools closed, and more apparently about to be closed and cleaned,
right.
As you say, cleaning.
And it's gonna keep on going because there's two things that are happening in Seattle. One is this long-term care facility. The long-term care facility is probably inundated with the virus. There have been of those six deaths, I believe four of them are at that long-term care facility. They're positive for the virus, and there are several others that are in critical condition. And the report, I don't know if it was Friday or over the weekend, but the initial report said that there were 108 residents at the facility. There were 180 staff at the facility. And there were 52 of them were symptomatic. And so they've been wheeling them off to the hospital all along. And the first responders doing that just had minimal PPEs on. And so the first responders are now under quarantine. And they're being tested to see if they've got the virus. And they're talking about moving all of the symptomatic residents to a hotel somewhere. They're going to rent a hotel and put them all there so that they didn't infect the other residents at the long-term care facility or the other staff at the long-term care facility. And so they've accounted for, I believe, four out of the six deaths. And there are a bunch that are critical. There are a bunch that are in the hospital with pneumonia, and they're going to keep making the news. And the reason they know about this is that they got permission to test. So that they've known that this isn't a situation that just arose. It arose, I think, maybe a week ago, but they couldn't really test because none of them been traveling. Nobody went to China. and therefore, even though they had pneumonia and that they, you know, clinically looked like they might very well have COVID, they weren't eligible for testing. And so as soon as they changed the regulations, they went ahead and started testing. And not surprisingly, they started getting positives. And that's what's happening throughout the country now. It's still not fully in gear. But I mean, a PCR test is not a new development. I mean, they were putting PCR was discovered back when I was in graduate school back in 1980. So it's been around for several decades using PCR.
Was the first hallmark test to give people who had possible HIV. That's where that came.
I was there for all that. HIV came out of reverse transcriptase, and this all came from RNA tumor virus studies. The study kind of got a boost.
You were right on the cutting edge of all that.
War on cancer. Yeah. Yeah, I gave my first talk at Cold Spring Harbor in 1976 for the RNA tumor virus, and it was chaired by Howard Kemen and David Baltimore, who had just got the Nobel Prize in the year before in 1975, and it was for reverse transcriptase, and reverse transcriptase is what the foundation was for the for the PCR test, and in fact that's where HIV was discussed because it was kind of a retrovirus also, and all these things just
one after the other. They had three tests. One was the ELISA, one was the Western blot, and then the gold standard was the PCR test for HIV. But that's another story. I got a story here. The CDC today has dropped reporting coronavirus testing numbers from their website. They're not reporting how many tests they've been giving. What do you make of that? Yeah.
Because everybody quoted it. Everybody quoted it. They said you've done 541 tests. South Korea's done 20,000. What's the problem here? And South Korea's got 5,000 positives. Actually, it wasn't 20,000. It was 200,000.
It was 30,000, then it went. It's 200,000 now in South Korea?
I think, how many tests they run? They're up to 5,000 positives or so.
And, last time I saw it was 30,000 plus tests. Now it's much higher.
And that's what the question is. I mean, the question is, you know, CDC is supposed to be number one in the world. That's the gold standard. And you've got, Nigeria detecting the virus, and the U.S. can't because they don't have any tests. Because not only did they distribute the test, have a problem, and recall the test, but they haven't been able to make the new test. The FDA went in there and said there are all kind of issues, and then they went ahead and gave permission for labs to independently do their own test and get accredited. And, you know, most research labs in the U.S. or in the world have the technology. They do PCR all the time. And so the test is the same. The only thing that changes is what the primers are. And the primers are just made with chemicals off the shelf. All you need is to read the sequence. You know, if you can see the sequence and you can pick which areas, and you don't even have to pick which areas. The areas have already been picked. I mean, the lab in Germany makes it for WHO and it's all published, and it's kind of like somebody put out a recipe for baking a cake, and that anybody that can read and has an oven can basically make that cake. And so it's the same thing with the PCR, that you can create the primers, that you can buy the primers. Most universities have labs to make the primers. All you got to do is write the sequence down on a piece of paper or text it to them. And they'll say your order is ready, and a day or two later, and you're ready to go. Yeah, you just take those, and it's all cookbook stuff. I mean, it's
Let me ask you a question. You take the primer, and you take
the sample, and take the RNA out, and you make a DNA copy, and you stick it in the PCR machine, and you get the results.
All right, I have a question. The CDC said the tests, the kits are defective. Remember, each kit has 700 tests in it. The kits are defective. Right. I read there are three
parts. The negative control is defective. Right.
It was one of three parts was supposedly defective. But the first two parts were apparently fine, and they were needed to detect coronavirus. So the CDC sent the kits back or told people, go ahead and use the kits just with parts one and two. Forget part three.
Right.
And that's really all they ever needed to do tests.
Right. Well, it's not quite as reliable. You like to have a negative control in there to make sure that you're not just picking up, you know, anything is positive. But that's what the negative control is in there. But in general, you know, if you get the, you need two positives or one negative to do the full test. So they're saying, you know, if you get the two positives, you can assume that.
Got it.
Yep. The other would be negative, and you can go with it. And so they gave permission to do it. But moreover, they gave permission for individual labs to do it. So the state labs, especially from the bigger states like New York went and got permission to use their own test developed at their Wadsworth lab, which is a very big lab, got, you know, 1,000 people in it. And they got permission to use it. And 2 hours later, they got the first positive. It's somebody from Iran. She was a healthcare worker who had gone to Iran, got infected, came back, and took the test, and she's positive. And that's what's happening. I mean, these guys are advertising it. They're putting out their press release, and they're saying, we got a positive. We got the positive today. We were given permission to use our own private, our test in our local lab 3 days ago. And here you go. And it's ridiculous. It's kind of like bang, bang, bang. They're all over the place. Yeah, they're coming up positives. Yeah. They're getting all these cases that are from Italy that are showing up on the East Coast. So if you go on the East Coast, you go to Rhode Island, had them from Atlanta, had it, and these are people that went on a class trip to Italy, or they went on a ski trip to Italy, and they got infected, and they came back here, and they didn't go to Wuhan, so they weren't eligible to be tested. Period. A week ago. And then even if you wanted to test for Italy, they couldn't test them because they didn't have a test. And, you could go online and see that there's cases all over Europe that are showing up from people that went to Italy. And they could have gone to a ski lodge in Italy. They could have gone to a soccer game in Milan. If they went to Northern Italy, there's a good chance they got infected.
We're talking about outdoor assemblages of people. Let me do something here. This is important. First of all, you don't have to get involved with this, but Trump said, as all of you know, that this was just a hoax. Remember? And then he got a lot of heat and he had to change his position. No, we're working very hard on this, but he called it a hoax first. He is so concerned with his rallies, Henry, that Donald Trump today again assured everyone, as you probably saw, that there's no reason to fear going to a big political rally indoors, especially one of his. Yeah. No problem at all.
I mean, that's the take-home lesson of the 1918 pandemic. They went into the cities that didn't allow parades and didn't allow mass gatherings did much better than the ones that did. And it's not rocket science.
He's sacrificing people for his narcissism and his ego. Right. He wants those rallies and that adulation. This guy doesn't care about people. I'm telling you.
Right.
He just said it right there.
Right.
And I'll tell you another thing. Let me say one other thing, please. I do not believe, if this continues to go where we know it's going to go, that in July there will be a national Democrat or, in August, a national Republican convention. I don't believe you're going to see 10,000 people in an arena. Go ahead.
The way these pandemics have happened is, and most of your listeners kind of remember the swine flu epidemic, although some don't believe that was real either. But the way that happened was kind of like the way the 1918 pandemic happened. And I would not be at all surprised if that's what's going to happen with this pandemic. But what happened was it starts in the late winter, spring. And you have kind of the first wave. I call it the herald wave because it kind of heralds the upcoming big pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And those initial cases are relatively mild and relatively limited. And then it kind of fades over the summer. So, I mean, it might not be that bad this summer, and they may be able to get the convention. But then it comes back with a vengeance in the fall. And so just about the time where you want to get your rallies after you got the nomination, and you're in, you know, September, October, getting ready for the November elections, that's when the pandemic.
All right, watch what will happen. Vote by mail or vote by internet. There'll be two potentials if Henry's right. They will not have people say, I'm not going to the polls. I'm not going to be around all those people.
Well, they aren't going to have any rallies either. You know, the ones that go to the rallies may not be able to vote because they have to get their ballot in the ICU. So anyway.
All true. No one's thinking ahead. They're thinking everything's going to be fine, normal. No, it's not. There's no guarantee it's going to be normal at all. And by July, there could be, we don't know how this is going to react.
It's almost guaranteed that this virus is not going away and staying away. It may fade over the summer, but there's just too much of it. And that's what the difference is. Well, there's two differences. The difference between this outbreak and SARS was that SARS didn't have the polybasic plebiscite. So SARS was kind of limited. Those civic cats played a role to get it kind of started in Guangdong province and keep it going in Hong Kong. And then it kind of spread. And then it kind of got under control, and it started up again in the fall. And then they found it in civet cats again, and they kind of culled all the civet cats and got that all under control. And then it kind of faded away. And actually, they didn't have that mutation in the ORFA. They didn't have that 29 nucleotide deletion to help it out either. And at least, you know, as far as reported cases, there really hadn't been any SARS cases since 2004. And but now this is, I mean, its name is SARS-CoV-2. I mean, it's definitely very, it's closer to SARS than any of the other
Chinese coronaviruses. Have called it that, which kind of reflects on what I said. I'm no scientist, but I called it SARS 2.0. And the Chinese are attaching SARS to COVID-19, literally.
Right, because that's what it looks like. I mean, they kind of denied it initially. I mean, when it was first being discussed, you know, they said it was a coronavirus. And then they said, well, even if it is a coronavirus, it's really not that closely related to SARS. It's like, you know, I remember 80% or so. But it turns out 80% is closer to SARS than anything else. And so it is closely related to SARS, 17 years later. And it doesn't have to be the exact same lineage, but it pretty much is. It's kind of an evolved SARS. And it's got this furin plebiscite. So this enzyme called FURIN. It is much more widespread in cell types, and that's why this virus can go to multiple cell types and potentially produce all kinds of problems beyond just pneumonia. It can create other problems because it can show up in neurological tissue, and it can go, you know, into the feces, and it's not a good virus. And the issue of everybody in Seattle coughing, that's probably a viral load issue. So if you get a low concentration of the virus, then you'll have a mild case. Some will be asymptomatic, and some, that's all they'll have is cough. They'll have this cough, and that's exactly what happened with the swine flu. I mean, I remember it well, and it was because, if you recall, swine flu started in the about the same time as this. It really got going towards the end of the flu season, the 2008-2009 season. And
I remember you coughing, Henry.
Right. But that wasn't until the fall. So it started in the spring, and the seasonal flu kind of faded away because it normally fades away in the spring. And swine flu kept on going. So pretty soon, by the late spring, the only thing that was circulating in influenza was swine flu. There was no, there wasn't even influenza B. Influenza B was gone, H3N2 was gone, and the swine H1N1 totally replaced the seasonal H1N1. And that led to a conspiracy theory, if you will. And this is just to give you an example of how a little bit of information, and kind of trying to put A and B together and or one and one together and coming up with three and think that you got the right answer happens. And here's how that went. That in the doctor's office, there'd be a quick test. It would just be see whether you're influenza A positive or not. And prior to the swine flu, if you took that test and you were influenza A positive, that meant you had seasonal flu. And then when swine flu came along, there were some testing issues then too, that there weren't enough kits and only CDC was doing it, and you had to mail the samples into Atlanta to get the results, and they were all backed up, so there was delays in getting the results. And then as things kind of evolved, number one, they gave permission, so some of the labs set up their own PCR tests and did it in-house. And others just could use the influenza A test because seasonal flu was gone. That it had been totally replaced by swine flu. So if you took a test and you were influenza A positive, that meant you had swine flu. Mm-hmm. So a technician who knew that the test for influenza A was seasonal flu, or it always had been, decided that this was a conspiracy, that all these people had seasonal flu, and they were told that the influenza A positive results meant they had swine flu. So they thought that these people had seasonal flu because they were influenza A positive, and they were writing on the tubes swine flu positive, and they thought it was all manufactured. There was some big plot to go ahead and take people that had seasonal flu and say they had swine flu, when in reality there was no seasonal flu by the spring of 2009. It was only swine flu. So everything that was influenza A positive was swine flu. And they said, well, you can just use that test because all the influenza A positives you send us are swine flu. There's no seasonal flu. But that became a conspiracy theory that it really was seasonal flu. And they were told to put swine flu down because they were influenza A positive. And, you know, they didn't understand that seasonal flu wasn't around anymore. It had been totally replaced by swine flu. And they thought that all these influenza A positives were seasonal flu, and this was a big hoax. There was no swine flu. They were just labeling seasonal flu swine flu. And
I got it.
And that was a widespread kind of a story back in 2009. And then what happened, though, just to make the analogy to this year, when it started in the fall, and I remember this very well because I told people that, you know, swine flu is going to come in the fall because it had faded over the summer, but it was still around. It was showing up in summer camps, and summer camps didn't want anybody knowing they had swine flu there. So, you know, it's a mystery disease. They didn't know what people had. They kind of denied they had it. But it was still floating around, and it was going to come back. And it started up in the South because they start school August 1st. And so when kids went back to school, then the swine flu started up again because they had kind of mass gatherings. They had all these kids in school. And why don't we get it and give it to the others? And I remember here in Pittsburgh at the beginning of the school year, everybody had a cough. They had this little cough, and everybody had it. And I had one daughter in middle school and one daughter in high school. The rest were all away in college and stuff. And I said, what do you guys think you have? You know, I said, is anybody coughing? And they said, yeah, everybody's coughing. I said, well, what do you think that is? I don't know. It's not some crud just going around. You know, everybody's got it. They're really not that sick. They've got this cough. They're all going, they're not missing class. They're going to class, and it's just everybody's coughing in school. And then it was like 6 weeks later that it kind of moved from everybody coughing to everybody's, well, not everybody, but half of the people had a temperature. And some of them went to see the doctor, and they were influenza A positive. And at that time, seasonal flu was totally replaced. The only thing that was circulating, especially in late August, early September, because the flu season didn't really start yet, the only thing that was circulating was swine flu. And if you were influenza A positive, you had swine flu. But it was described, and, you know, it was kind of this perfect storm. You know, some kids had seasonal flu, some kids had stomach flu, some kids had bronchitis. Some kids had allergies. They all had swine flu, but they picked each of these symptoms of swine flu, and they called it another disease. But it was, you know, it was remarkable that there were so many different diseases going on at the same time, and there was a 10%, you know, absentee rate because there was this perfect storm of back-to-school diseases. But anyway, I think the same thing's happening with this virus, and that it's all over the place. A lot of people have the milder version of it. They're coughing. They're spreading the virus. The virus is very widespread. It led to these people wondering if everybody's coughing in Seattle because they've got
an allergy.
Coronavirus. No, they know they've got a problem.
They know that
they're getting all these community cases. These people haven't been traveling, and they're getting one after the other, and they're testing them, and they're coming up positive. But they're not testing the mild ones. They're not taking these guys. Oh, I got a little bit of a cough. Oh, we'll test you and see what you got. Now you got to have a fever. You got to have something that looks like flu.
No, this is all wrong. They should be testing anybody.
And they have to be negative for the flu.
No, right.
They're not going to take cough. I mean, you saw that happen on the Diamond Princess. You had guys doing videos. Yeah. All they're doing is coughing. And they say, well, I don't know, it's the air conditioner, and they get the healthcare workers to come by and visit them and say, well, you know, we had these reports that you really weren't feeling well. It's just a little cough. And they didn't have a fever, they had a cough, and they weren't tested. They went days coughing. And it was the two of them. I mean, it was a couple.
David and Sally.
David and Sally, they were both coughing back and forth, and David had a bout with diarrhea, which is another symptom. He said it was the food allergy, and then he was vomiting, and that was because he was nervous about the test, and it was like, you know, it's just like...
Total denial. Sad.
Going back to school, and everybody's got a symptom of swine flu, but none of them have swine flu. They all have something
none
else that kind of matches it.
Let me just run down a couple of quick things here. Again, Oregon and Washington, a casino worker in eastern Oregon confirmed they've closed the entire, it's an Indian casino, they've closed that down. Corona Princess evacuees have now been released after quarantine periods from Travis Air Force Base. Well, we know now that's no guarantee.
It's a guarantee that some are going to all of a sudden have
They'll still have it, of course. Yeah, they'll be spreading it. Yeah. And they'll develop symptoms. Australians are told no more handshakes or kissing, which is probably a pretty good idea. And nothing being said by the CDC about that. Common sense stuff. Huh? No more handshaking, no more kissing for now. This is really getting to be out there, and it's going to get worse. I got also an image up there. They're flying it in. Canadians furious at Trudeau as the government refuses to stop travelers flying in from East Asia and Iran and mainland China, too. And then I've got an actual picture of the Korean airline flights from, what is it, Flight Alert or something. Anyway, it shows how many Korean airline planes are flying into the U.S. at 10 o'clock this morning, bringing thousands more each day, these airlines. And nobody's saying anything.
Well, South Korea, I'm looking, they got 4,812 positives with 34 deaths. And Italy's got 2,000 positives with 52 deaths. And Iran's got 1,500 positives with 66 deaths. So remember, they were poo-pooing the 50 deaths a week ago.
Yes, they
were. They officially have 66. And that's a low number. You know, because they've only got 1,500 cases, you know, so they've got a very high case fatality rate with 66 deaths out of 1,500 cases. They've got 291 discharges. So they got 291 discharges and 66 deaths. So that's gross undercount.
Six times five, that's 20%.
Yeah.
There's one headline here, just one moment in time of Korean Airlines flights bringing thousands into the U.S. around the clock. That's a story headline. You want to look at it's called Flight Aware, I think. Look at the airline traffic coming in. That's not Japan Air. That's not Cathay Pacific. That's not Philippine Air. That's just one airline, Korean Airlines, and they're flying these people in, and if they're asymptomatic, they let them right through. Come on in. No problem.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, that's what they're doing. They're screening them, but it's not. A, that's not going to work. And B, you know, there's a whole lot more cases that are already here than are flying in. I guarantee you that.
Absolutely.
There are thousands, tens of thousands.
How about half the population of Seattle coughing, whatever?
Yeah, there's a lot of coughing. They notice that. So,
All right. All right, well, we just touched on a little bit of it. You can catch all the headlines at my site. A lot of them lead right to Henry's, recombinomics.com. He's got it all there, too. So we'll keep you as up to date as anybody could, and we'll be back tomorrow night. Thank you, Henry, again, very much. Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Take care.
Okay, Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD. And, these stories... Italy, coronavirus cases jumped 50% in one day. You got to read them. Just read the headlines so you'll have at least a thumbnail sketch of what's going on. This is just moving exactly where Henry forecast it would go. All right.